and welcome to the Basic Latina Podcast, an intimate conversation with friends about love, life, wellness, and everything in between. Today I have on the show a special guest. She is my friend. Her name is Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Now, I wanted to have Amy on the show because Amy and I were former co-workers, became friends, and her and I were in a setting where we were both struggling with similar issues at our job, and we also had very similar background stories of our families. And one thing that her and I always talked about was setting boundaries and saying no. And Amy has a lot of experience in her field, and I have experience in a particular different field, but we both had issues with being women of color and predominantly white spaces, and also having to set boundaries with our family and in our professional settings. And I wanted to address boundaries and saying no on this podcast because it is an important part of self-care. So we're going to get into it. So thank you so much, Amy, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So why do you think, you know, hearing what we've talked about and, you know, how much you know about the podcast and me and kind of my style, why do you think that setting boundaries is important for self-care?
I think that's a great question. I think one of the main reasons that we need to set boundaries is because when we don't, our body builds up a lot of toxic stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And especially as women of color, I don't think we take the time to decompress. We don't really have an avenue to release all of that stress that builds up. And it manifests itself in a number of ways. We may have breakouts in our skin. Our cycles may become non-regulated or unregulated. We may be having shorter patience with our family and our friends. Things are going to set us off faster. And so it's really important for us to have healthy relationships, healthy bodies. It's just so important for us to function every day.
Now, Amy, I know that you have two girls. Now, do you ever talk to them about setting boundaries? Because I feel like when you're young, you talk about physical space with children. Not you, but, you know, when you're a parent, you talk about physical space. Don't let someone touch you and make sure you take space from people or don't be in someone's face. But today we're not talking about physical space. Mm-hmm. We're talking about mental and emotional and spiritual space. Yeah. So do you feel like when you're having the conversation around boundaries, do you cover all of the different spaces or boundaries, or is it mostly about what we're talking about today?
I've never really thought about it in that context with my children until now, and actually you prompted me to think about how I address that moving forward. Having two young African-American daughters, I definitely take the time to talk to them about boundaries, especially having young girls who are very comfortable in their skin. They're very comfortable wearing their natural hair. And they've grown up in predominantly white spaces. So before we moved to Connecticut, both of my children were born in West Virginia, which was a wonderful home for us, but very homogenous. I think the minority population may be anywhere from 3 to 5%.
Wow.
And so a lot of our conversations are about accepting who you are, loving who you are, being comfortable in that space.
Yeah.
But also, creating boundaries with other people so that they also understand that they need to respect your space. Not reaching out and touching your hair when they feel like it, or understanding what is appropriate conversations. And that's challenging with kids because they are so curious.
Right.
But I feel as a parent and as a woman of color with young ladies of color, that it's really important to help them understand where those boundaries end and where something goes from curious to inappropriate.
And would you say that because we're women of color, our conversations with our children are going to be different in terms of boundaries and spaces, because we have to function in societies, and we have to be aware of our bodies and how they take space too.
Yeah. And that is a tough one because, for example, I have young daughters who dance. I have young daughters who participate in a lot of activities where you don't see a lot of people of color.
Yeah.
And so it's a hard balance in helping them be free and be children and accept who they are, but also having to go through life and remind them you are going to be viewed differently. And while you're being free, you have to still be mindful that people may look at your behaviors and interpret them very differently. And so it's a challenging line to walk.
For sure. And I think that what I've seen from you so far in the little bit of time that I've known you, it's been only a year or less than a year, actually.
It'll be a year June 5th.
Oh, my God. Our friendiversary.
Yeah.
I've seen that you do a really, really good job. We were actually just talking about it when we got on the show of setting the stage for how to make yourself well and mm-hmm. getting in alignment, as I keep saying yeah. tonight. Can you share a little bit about what you were telling me, you know, in terms of your actual physical space? How do you get in alignment when you feel like your workspace and people around you are chaotic?
Yeah, so actually I've gotten into a habit every morning of starting out with some positive affirmations. And actually this is something I learned from you. I used to start my day off checking my email and, you know, being stressed about what I had to do before I even walked into my environment for the day. Mm-hmm. And so I start off with positive affirmations. Mm-hmm. And actually before that, when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is pray. I thank the Lord for waking me that morning, for waking my children. I go around, we give hugs and kisses.
That's so cute.
When I have time, I try to, you know, have a full meal.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm traveling to work, rather than stressing about what's going on, I try to be thankful for the fact that I have a job, think about what positivity I can bring to that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get there, I'm really into essential oils, so I like to set the yes. tone. Mm-hmm. Depending on my mood, I try to select oils that'll help me be balanced or relieve my stress or help me be focused.
Right.
And then I'm learning to be okay with shutting my door, saying no to the outside before mm-hmm. I have a chance to calibrate myself, and preparing my mind for the day.
So it sounds like you're doing a little bit of setting a physical barrier between you and all the other toxic stress that could be going on around you, and then not internalizing mm-hmm. what other people have going on.
Absolutely. I think mornings can be chaotic. You know, the Absolutely. Weather can be adverse.
Traffic
yep. can happen. You know, something can be going on with the elevator or right. what have you. And so, and I hate to, or I don't want to say I'm even just putting a barrier between myself and stress, but I think I'm just putting, I'm putting a barrier between myself and anything external,
mm-hmm.
good or bad, positive okay. or negative, until I have a chance to just be calibrated and be, because if I'm not in the right space,
yeah,
something can be good and I may miss an opportunity as well.
Right. And I love when you said that, because visually I saw yourself getting into an alignment, like sitting in your chair, your back straight, like your oils on, maybe not your back straight, but you're like relaxed and your door closed. So I physically saw you kind of getting calibrated, and it reminds me of when you are setting a boundary or setting a stage, that's the expectation. So, for example, we don't work together anymore, but when I got to know you, you had a very, like, open door policy, but then when you started realizing what the climate was in the office, you were just like, okay, I need to change yeah. what I'm doing, because it's affecting me, what other people are doing. So, when you changed, when you decided that you were going to, like, close your door and get yourself kind of aligned in the morning so you could take on whatever the day had for you, I already knew what to expect. So it's kind of like you doing all that sets the stage for everybody else to know what your boundaries are.
Yeah. And that was me saying no to anything yes. outside of what my priorities are for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you don't want to be perceived as off-putting or negative or not open.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, it definitely sets a tone. And it sets the stage for how other people are going to interact with me. So they understand that, yes, like Amy is here and she's open and friendly, but she's focused.
Yes.
And so if I come into her space when the door is not open, I need to be focused as well.
Does that translate in your personal life? Because I know we're talking a lot about work, but
yeah.
we've talked a lot about family offline, and you can share as much or as little as you want to, but has that been as successful when you're trying to set boundaries with your family members or your friends or your loved ones?
That one is, it's a little less challenging for me now just because most of my family is in Philadelphia mm-hmm. and I'm here, so there's a good 3 to 4 hour barrier between us.
That's
and when
awesome.
I was in West, it can be. When I was in West Virginia, it was it was about a 5 to 6 hour
mm-hmm.
Travel time. But even outside of geographic travel, I set a lot of boundaries in terms of how late someone can call me or how late they can text me.
How do you do that?
I tell people, you know. And it's not, you know, it's not a rude conversation. Don't call them up, you know, nothing like that. But right. it's something even as simple as, you know, oh, hey, thanks. I don't receive, you know, I don't accept callers at this hour. And
I love that.
Especially if I'm dating someone new, it's really important for people to understand that, you know, I'm not someone that you can just approach when you feel like it. You need to, I set that boundary
Someone that you're dating, that's not easy, but it's a little easier because you're setting the stage from the beginning when they know you, like, this is my expectations, this is what I expect. But with your family, when did you start telling them, you know, this is, at this hour, I don't want any calls, or... at this time, I'm doing family time. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, please don't call me when I'm working because I'm focused. Please don't call me with, you know, external things that I don't want to be drawn into. Mm-hmm. It took me a little while. I think it's very challenging as a young professional. Your family knows you as a child. They've watched you grow. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to transition into adulthood. And so they still see you in those eyes. It was gradual. And I think having that geographic space between us helped as well.
Did it help because you were in a grad program and then getting your PhD and you were a parent, because those natural responsibilities got in the way of you maybe being available by phone and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think so.
Yeah.
But outside of my family with friends and people that I dated... you said something that made me, that reminded me of kind of the topic, and it's setting that boundary early.
Yes.
Because it's so much easier, I've learned, to say no at the start of a relationship than it is down the line. Because once you establish a pattern of behavior, it's very challenging to change it on both sides. It's going to be harder to say no. And it's going to be confusing on the other side of it to say, you've allowed me to behave this way for so long.
Yeah.
So why should I change? And why are you different? And are you really saying no? Or is there something else behind this? Yeah.
I'm having like deep sighs because it's so true. And Amy, you know this because we talk about our personal lives outside of this. But just for the purpose of this episode, that is something that I'm struggling with so much because I'm growing into the young woman that I want to be, or the woman that I want to be, because I still consider myself a young woman for some reason.
You are, yeah.
And I'm a young professional as well, and I feel like I just kind of came into myself a couple of years ago, and I did not set any boundaries, and I never said no to anyone. No was a scary word for me, and I wanted to talk about that, but setting boundaries and saying no were just not part of my vocabulary, and... my mom and I have a similar personality, and it's going to sound mean, but we're both pushovers in that people know that we're always going to be there for them, and that they know that we're going to drop everything. That was just the way that we functioned. So then when I became an adult, and I became a therapist, and I was away from my family, and I went into grad school, like, different parts of my life allowed me to reflect on the fact that this is really unhealthy, and I actually lost two friends. They're still alive, obviously, but I'm no longer friends with these two individuals that were really, really toxic because of that reason. They wanted me to drop everything and be with them and call me at all hours of the night and would get mad if I wasn't there. Thankfully, I don't have any people in my life like that, but it was hard for me to tell them, like, no, you can no longer call me in the middle of the night. No, I'm not going to always be there for you. Like I said, I always would, because it was confusing. They were just like, well, why are you changing and you're different and why are you being fake? So it's hard if you have friends that you've known for so long to start telling them now at 28 and up. I don't want to know. I'm not the same person you knew a year ago. They're going to be like, what?
Yeah. And so, that goes back to what, and not to interrupt you, but that goes back to what, when you were asking me about my daughters, that's something that I try to establish with them now.
That's awesome.
And I guess that is outside of a physical boundary, but helping them identify what characteristics comprise a true friend.
Yeah.
Because that also helps you to set boundaries. And I use my relationships as examples. I have, you know, my great friends that I have in West Virginia, even with you as an example, the friends that I have here now, when they describe circumstances to me, I may say to them, okay, have you ever seen mommy speak to Miss Amneris this way? Or do you think that if mommy said no to Miss Amneris, she would get angry, and try to give them a reference point. And I love using you as an example because it's also really important, to me for my daughters to see me have not just positive interactions with everyone around me, but especially positive interactions between two women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something that is not portrayed really positively
No.
in society.
No, and you, and I remember when we first started working together, which is kind of off topic, but I like latched onto you because you were the only other woman of color. Because I was like, I could just cannot wait to talk to her about, just to, you know, unpack. I was dying to unpack things with you, and I always thank you for your friendship, because I think when I met you is when I realized how unhealthy and toxic some of the people and some of the things that I was doing. But it's hard when you're an adult, you're set in your ways. And it's much easier when you make new friends like you did here in Connecticut. Or when you're, when you have romantic relationships, you can set the stage early.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to accept that. No, you're not going to talk to me like this. And I'm not going to accept that behavior from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you have any, do you have any strategies if you are someone that's been friends with someone for a long time, you want to set a boundary with someone that you've known for a long time? Do you have a situation where you've had to do that with somebody they've been known for a while, and it went good or bad, and what you did?
I haven't been in that situation for quite a while, so let me start off with that. I've been, I think since I returned to graduate school, which would have been 6 to 7 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
I think that's when, and I might have been your age at that point, but I think that's when I really realized that I was going to have an opportunity to surround myself with a new cohort of people. Coming out of being in a toxic environment and a toxic relationship,
mm-hmm.
I was very conscientious about setting a new precedent
mm-hmm.
early. And I've noticed, and this, you know, unfortunately may be true for a lot of people, that when you set those boundaries, that's kind of where you really can start to recognize who belongs in your life and who doesn't.
Yes.
And I think anyone who wants to begin to use the power of no, as I say, needs to be prepared that not everybody is going to be ready to go on that journey with you.
I love that, because that resonates with me, and I think I'm thinking about my loved ones, and it resonates with them as well, because mm-hmm. you have to, just like I asked you before, I'm just like, well, how did you set those boundaries about not calling after a certain time? You were like, I told people. And it's funny, because it, in my life, it's been that I had something bad happen, and I had to set a boundary.
Yes.
I haven't had the opportunity to set a boundary when things were, like, okay.
When they're good.
Right. It was always when I was angry. Mm-hmm. I would get a call. One thing I hate those two things that you actually mentioned. Somebody calling me late and somebody calling me at work. I hate when people call me at work and call me late.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had to tell someone, don't call me after 9, because nobody ever calls me after 9 unless it's an emergency. But people call me at work all the time, and I hate it. So my mom, I had to tell her one time when I was, like, yelling, do not call me at work. But I hate that I had to yell at her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's my fault that I had to yell at her because I didn't set the stage.
And I think, you definitely want to address it before it comes to yelling.
Yeah.
And hopefully not name calling.
I do not recommend that. That was not,
And I think, you know, it's, you can be more subtle. Mm-hmm. And it may just be, you know, oh, I saw you called. I'm not really able to get back to you because my schedule is really, I have a really hectic schedule. So it's probably best to get back or reach out to me after 5. Or, hey, you know, I have a lot going on, so I like to get a good night's rest. Probably not best to, or you probably won't be able to reach me after 8:30 or 9.
Mm. And it's so funny.
And it's softer.
Yeah, it's softer. I'm always surprised when I get so much anxiety about telling people no. And then finally, or setting a boundary. And when I do it, it goes so well that I'm like, why was I stressing out? Somebody called me at work and I texted them and said, hey, I really can't talk at work. I'll call you when I get out. Like, okay. I just wanted to share something exciting, and I got excited. You know, people get excited and
people
they call
get excited.
You. And I'm just like, I was so anxious to send them a message saying, I'll call you later.
I noticed that. I noticed that a lot. And this is not just women of color. I see this a lot in women.
Yes.
I think within society, and we saw this through the Trump elections, and when we speak up, it is not perceived well. And I think for men, when they say no, when they set these boundaries, it's perceived as strength. And so often for women, it's perceived as being nasty or, you know, having a bad attitude or being unreasonable or uncooperative within the workplace.
We have to be compliant.
And unfortunately, young girls and women are often raised to be likable.
Yes.
And no has kind of become like a four-letter word at this point when it comes from the mouths of women. And I think that's really tragic.
Yeah.
And for myself and for my children, I really try to reinforce, you know, it is okay to say no. You do what's comfortable. And I tell my children, you know, within limits, it is okay to say no whenever you are uncomfortable.
Right.
Because I'd rather you say no when you're uncomfortable than for you to say yes. You know, it's okay for a short time to say no and be uncomfortable to say yes and spend weeks, months, years in an environment that is going to be toxic to your body. There was a recent article that talks about this, and the implications impact our mental health. They impact our rates of successful childbirth and fatality. And that stress really builds up. And we have to be proactive, especially with our next generation, and empowering them to speak up for themselves.
I love that you mentioned that, because I don't see a lot of parents emphasizing self-care, right? Mm-hmm. And not taking care of yourself and how it can kind of snowball into all these other physical, mental, and emotional issues. But setting boundaries and saying no at a young age, you know, God bless my mom. I'm sure she did the best that she could in terms of raising me, but I was never taught how to set boundaries and how to say no. So I feel like this all starts from your childhood and how you grew up. For me, I had to learn from having toxic relationships and being burnt out, you know, from in my cup being empty from these relationships. And it wasn't until that happened that I realized, like, this can't be friendship. Like, there's no way that this is healthy. I was never taught that. And I think if there's an impact that we can make in our community is showing young kids, implementing it maybe after school programs, or we're talking about self-care, boundaries, saying no, not just the physical touch stuff.
I think, I mean, even at the earliest ages, you know, we reprimand our children when they learn the word no. And I think that's a mistake. You know, sometimes it's appropriate, but you know what? Take the time to ask, you know, why are you saying no? How is this making you feel? And if your child can communicate to you that something is making them uncomfortable, you need to address that.
Yes.
And reinforce that, yes, this is the time when you speak up and say no. And it's okay. I mean, even in terms of, I know in some of our cultures, when you see a family member, it's like, okay, go ahead and give such and such a kiss or a hug.
I was just going to say that.
And children are reprimanded if they say no. You know, they may have just met this person. There could be a room of 30 or 40. Like, my mom has 13. See, my mom is the youngest of 13 children.
Yeah.
So when I take my children to a family reunion, I'm not forcing them to walk around and hug, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 people that they don't know. But within that community, you know, them saying no is perceived very negatively. And I remind them and I remind everyone around them. My priority is that I raise young women who are empowered to feel comfortable as they walk in their skin through society.
Right.
And that is what's most important.
And I feel like I've only heard that now as people are becoming more, for lack of a better word, more woke. Because when I was I'm almost 30 now, I graduated grad school 6 years ago. So when I was in grad school and I was, you know, practicing to be a social worker, they didn't tell us about, nobody's talking about how children have a voice, you know, children as human beings, and they can say no, and don't make them give relatives a hug and a kiss. Mm-hmm. Like, those were not conversations that were happening. It wasn't until the injury center when I actually met Rebecca. Mm-hmm. Where Rebecca was telling me, I think I was telling her a story about my goddaughter, we were talking about kids or something like that, and she was just like, don't make her give somebody a kiss or a hug. And of course, when someone says it out loud, you're like, oh, that makes sense, but you never think about it, because you're like, I don't want my child to be perceived as rude. Here we go again, moms. I don't want, you know, my daughter to be perceived as rude. So go give your uncle a kiss. Go give your aunt a kiss. Go give them a hug. Stop being so rude.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say that is because that's what I was told. I was rude. Or that little girl has an attitude. She never talks to anybody. Or she's always saying no. She don't like anyone. Or she's going to be real nasty. Those are the labels that we're putting on the kids who say no and put up boundaries.
Yeah. That just made me think back to my own research around child maltreatment, and which is, you know, a huge burden within our society, hugely underdetected. And I think one of the reasons is because there's kind of this bizarre dynamic where we want our kids to tell us if someone has hurt them, and we want them to speak up, and we expect them to come to us while simultaneously sending the messaging that it's not okay to speak up and it's not okay to say mm-hmm. no. If we reprimand them when they feel uncomfortable and they speak up, how can we expect them to then come to us and confide when something is really wrong?
Right. Sorry, you just snatched my wig. So. No, but I think it just makes so much sense, and I don't know why more parents are not doing that. And I only say that because I know a lot of parents, and the things that they say around to their kids around safety and, I don't know, boundaries and no, again, no has such a strong connotation. It's like, why is it that society has such a problem with people saying no? And, I mean, you touched upon a little bit when it comes to women, right, that we are told that we need to just, like, be there for people, and we have, like, this, like, burden of responsibility as society, going back to, like, biblical times. We could take it back all the way there. Saying no is, like, that's a no-no, and it's, like, shameful.
It is, and I think even outside of women, just people of color, if you really think about it, the civil rights movement was not that long ago, and so you have... You know, a lot of African American women who are achieving terminal degrees, MDs or PhDs or what have you. But these same individuals were not treated as equals just 40, 50 years ago. And if we're honest, they're not necessarily treated as equals now. Mm-hmm. And so you have this dynamic where these people are rising within society, but the perception, on one hand, at least for me as a woman of color, you know, I have this internal conflict and conversation about how I'm perceived in everything that I do, but especially when it's adverse to the larger environment that I'm in. And then you have the other side of it, which, you know, I have to speculate, but it is also an odd dynamic where you have a group of people who were submissive not too long ago who are now telling you no. And I think that dynamic can be uncomfortable subconsciously, even for people who are, as you say, woke on both sides of it. And so it's complex, and it's not always intentional, but it definitely has devastating mental health implications. I am thankful that I have had you up until recently in the workplace to relate to, but the reality is I don't have people that look like me in my space on a regular basis. And if I do, they're few and far between, and many of us are not in the same positions. And so it's very challenging to have to triple think about what you say and what you wear and how you style your hair. And I think, at least for me, especially coming into a new job and a new environment in the past year, was very difficult to speak up about the challenges that I have, because I also feel a responsibility in everything that I do, because there aren't a lot of people that look like me.
Right.
There's a huge responsibility on my part to present myself well and to do my job well and to seem competent.
Right, because you don't want to be seen as that...
that person of color who's not performing.
Right.
And if I say no, will it be perceived that I'm difficult, or will it be perceived that I don't know what I'm doing?
Right.
And then there's that conflict. Do you know that that's what I'm thinking? And is this why you're tasking me with these things? Your mind can go to a lot of dark spaces, and that's where that toxic stress can build up. Yes. I mean, you can...
We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about how... because you touched on so many important points, but we talked about how, especially in predominantly white spaces, and we're in an environment where you're the person of color and they're maybe treating you differently or giving you things, how, in your personal opinion, how have you been able to stay grounded? You know, you're trying to set these boundaries, and you're trying to say no. What kind of, I'm sure there were times where you, like, want to scream, you're biting your lip, you're getting mad, so...
Yeah.
How did you remain kind of true to yourself during these challenging times, especially when we're talking about recent events and stuff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing is what you just said. I stayed true to myself. So I think that for me, knowing that I'm producing good work, gives me the confidence to speak up when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more than that, I have a strong sense of my value.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't yes. always had that. But fortunately, I had great mentors
mm-hmm.
behind mm-hmm. me, Ian Rocket, Keith Zulig, both at West Virginia University, Constantia Charbonnet. They all instilled in me a sense that when I leave from my university and when I complete my education, wherever I go, they instilled in me that I needed to always know my worth and make sure that people valued me. And that if I didn't feel valued, that wasn't the place. They really instilled that in me. So when I encounter a challenge,
mm-hmm.
I try to remind myself, like what's that movie, The Help? You
yes.
are smart.
You are
you
smart.
Are beautiful.
You is kind.
You is kind.
Yeah.
And it sounds funny, but I sit down and I think about, I reinforce all those things
mm-hmm.
that I've been told. I remember what my accomplishments are. I remember what my achievements are. I remember that I'm a child of God. I remember
yes.
that I have options. Not to say that, I mean, that's not a leveraging point for me when I have a conflict.
Right, right.
But I think just remembering that and remembering that value is important, because I think
mm-hmm.
when we have a conflict, we forget what we're bringing to the table.
Yes.
We immediately go to, this person is superior to me, this person has this power over me, and we forget that we are also valued and important. And so I think remembering those things really gives me the confidence
yes.
to speak up and say, hey, no, this is too much, or this is not what we discussed. And I've noticed that it's usually well received. And more than anything, I think it's often received with shock, because I don't think many people take the time to think, like, I can push back respectfully,
right.
but I can push back and I'm not going to lose my job because I say this isn't okay.
And I think that's a good thing to kind of think about, is doing it respectfully, because
mm-hmm.
you mentioned a couple of things about how you remain grounded at work, at least, or setting the boundaries, is making sure you have an ally. So you came into this work environment, you probably saw me when you first came, but then you didn't know that we were going to form a bond and we would have very mirroring experiences. And then already knowing how to set boundaries in a new environment and knowing what was going to keep you aligned, the oils and closing your
mm-hmm.
door, and being confident in your skills.
Yeah.
And that's
the confidence
amazing.
Is, I would say, of all those things, being confident in who you are,
mm-hmm.
loving yourself, accepting yourself as you are, who you are, is probably most important in being able to set boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel this way? Because I'm thinking about a lot of my friends who live in Connecticut, at least, who work in predominantly white spaces, and they're exhausted. They're you know, surrounded around toxic stress. They're just not doing well in their current work environment. And I remember us talking about your past experience, you've been in predominantly white spaces. Did you feel, like what I'm saying now, kind of that toxic stress, or did you feel stressed out or have any issues putting up boundaries? Was it different than the experiences you had recently here in Connecticut?
When I was in West Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
So let me go back even further than that. I grew up in Mount Airy, Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I went to what was recently named as one of the most diverse high schools in the country.
Mm.
And so I've always, I'm, as many people are, I travel a lot. I am very comfortable being in environments where I'm the one who's different, where I am the
mm-hmm.
minority. And I'm comfortable being in environments where people look like me. So going to, I had an opportunity to be well-traveled by the time I left high school.
Mm.
And so I think that set me up to be able to go into a predominantly white space, feeling comfortable with who I was.
That's amazing.
And of course, you have to educate people who don't have that same
mm-hmm.
Culture or
mm-hmm.
and experience. But when I was in West Virginia, fortunately, I was in a university environment, and so it's a little more diverse than the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But to their credit, the university did a great job of focusing on inclusion,
mm-hmm.
Making
awesome.
That a priority. And really valuing its students. And so in a lot of environments, I think students feel what people feel when they go in the workplace. I am less than, I'm not as important. And I was coming from an environment where the hierarchy was focused on the work that we had to do. Mm-hmm. The hierarchy never felt like it was about who was most powerful or who was most important. And so I left with that confidence. So I never felt that. And actually, I probably feel the, I don't even want to say racial tension, but I feel the difference more here mm-hmm. than I did when
segregation?
I was in that space.
Not segregation.
That's not the right, there's just a cultural,
Well, we're much colder up north, for sure.
Yes, yes.
I feel like it's just like a, I mean, you noticed that when you came here, you were just like, what's happening? Yeah. Why is everyone like this? And I'm like,
people are more guarded. I wouldn't say cold. I think once the initial facade fades away, you definitely are a warm people.
I hope so. So, man, it's just, I feel like this is, we can go on about this because a lot of people struggle with this and bringing it away from work a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even just the word no and texting it to someone is hard. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you've ever experienced this. So we experience it a lot in my friends group and a lot of my friends is saying no to a favor or request. Mm-hmm. How do you experience that conflict?
I don't. And you know, I think as we, each decade we grow, every five years or so we grow.
I hope to.
But I will tell you, growing up I didn't appreciate it. My mom had six sisters. Mm-hmm. And I think when you grow up in a big family, you just have to learn how to speak up for yourself.
Okay.
And stand your ground. And so growing up, I was around very strong women. Just very strong personalities. You know, mm-hmm. My grandmother had 13 children, so everyone is fighting for their attention. Everyone wants to be heard and seen. Growing up, I found it obnoxious. I found it obnoxious that when I went out, my aunts and my mother were those people who spoke up, my food's not right. You know, and they weren't rude, but they were always the people, you know, would you fix, this needs fixed. This is not what I requested.
Right, right.
And I always was worried about how we were perceived.
Mm.
But I didn't realize they were modeling the behavior that I would grow up to appreciate and develop for myself. So I don't have that problem. I think,
because your mom and your grandmother and your aunt, right? Mom, grandmother,
yeah,
aunt. Aunts set the stage for you.
They set the stage for me, and I'm so thankful for that. You know, and I have to remind myself, and I think we talked about this in the past, that anyone who gets angry when you say no,
I know,
does not belong in your space.
I have such a hard time with that because people that I love get so mad at me mm-hmm. about me saying no, and I feel horrible because I know inside, like, well, then I shouldn't have this person in my life. But I'm like, I'm not going to give up a friendship or a relationship or even a loved one. They're getting mad at me for saying no. I know that internally. And what I preach is that they should not be, they should not be making that impact. But mm-hmm. it's so hard. And I'm always so surprised when people who are, like, pushing 30 or in their 30s mm-hmm. who are adults get so mad about their friends and family saying no about, like, no, I'm not going to grab lunch with you. I'm trying to save money. No, I cannot pick you up because I'm busy doing this. No, I cannot. I'm always surprised because I'm just like, they are adults. They're allowed to say no. What
without
is the problem?
Without the qualifier.
Without the but, yeah.
But without the but, without the yes. reasoning. And the reason that's so dangerous is because when you say no and someone gets upset, it's bigger than that moment.
Mm-hmm.
That is an indication to you that they don't respect you and they don't respect your decisions.
Yes.
And that that can lead to a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. Financial problems.
Yes.
Physical abuse. Emotional abuse.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Right?
I don't know what to
preach.
Preach, girl. Okay. Yeah. No, because it resonates with me because I feel like I have less and less of it for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not as bad. But my good friends know, who know me for years, that I struggle with this. And I had so many people in my life that I love so much that I have struggled with this. Mm-hmm. And my mom is in her 50s. God bless her. But she would be the woman at the restaurant who would order something and would get a whole different meal and would just eat it. Because she didn't want to cause trouble in the restaurant. And she didn't, you know, so she kind of set the stage for me that, like, you don't stir the pot. So I just don't stir the pot. Mm-hmm. So my personality is that I don't look for conflict. I don't say anything. Mm-hmm. I will get something at a restaurant and it's bad and I'm like, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to return a drink.
Yes. Can I pause you really quick? Because you said something that resonated with me. You said, I don't look for conflict. And I think it's so important to understand that standing up for yourself and saying no is not looking for conflict.
I know.
It's saying no. And that's where I'm so different. I know. And I think it's so important for people to distinguish that.
And for me, it overlaps, which it shouldn't. It shouldn't overlap because, I grew up thinking that saying no was like, you're causing trouble. So in my mind, don't cause trouble. Don't say no. Don't do anything. Just keep quiet. Lay low. And so now that I'm an adult and I'm trying to build more healthy relationships with my friends and trying to take care of myself internally and trying to develop romantic relationships, just like you and I were talking about that guy that I went on a date with. Why did I sit and have dinner with somebody for 5 hours?
Who made you uncomfortable.
Who made me uncomfortable. And I told you that I have been on dates and engaged with people who were unsafe, who were gonna do something bad to me, but I stuck around because I didn't want to be like...
Yeah. And I understand. I mean, there are definitely circumstances where you need to be safe.
Right,
and where
you really
need to, you know, be a little more strategic in your exit.
Yes.
But there are also circumstances where...
You are safe. You can leave safely.
And you can, you know, this isn't working for me. Thanks. I've got to go.
Oh, my God.
Have a good night. And I think it's uncomfortable the first few times. I mean, I have interactions outside of work, at work. I just had an interaction at work where, you know, it was an opportunity, but it wasn't right for me. And someone was excited about it. And I just had to say, you know what? I appreciate this, but no. But no.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remind myself, it's not mean, it's not rude, I don't have an attitude. I think if you have goals for yourself, and that's maybe one way where you can kind of start the process of feeling comfortable saying no, reevaluating your goals. This is not in line with what I have, what I see for myself. This is not in line with the life that I want. This is not in line with my spiritual goals.
Yes.
And I think when you put it in that context, it's fine. And you know what, if you feel like more comfortable given the qualifier, that's what it is.
You know, I was reading, you brought me to like our next like section of this interview, which is like kind of how, how do we say no and set boundaries? And you kind of said it is that you kind of have to figure out like your style, like figuring out what your goals are, if that's what's going to make you feel better, maybe saying affirmations to yourself, like, that was not mean. I was not being rude. I said what I had to say, right? So you're saying that to yourself. Maybe you're looking at your goals. Maybe you have to do a qualifier, which isn't healthy. There's a Psychology Today article that I'm going to attach to the show notes that talks about strategic steps on how to say no. And it says that you shouldn't say no, but there's a way to like add a qualifier without saying the but.
Without the but.
Without the
but. I've been working on that lately as well.
Oh, nice.
I've been working on a hard no. just a hard no.
But for those of us who can't say just no, I forget the exact word. It was just like, I can't do that right now.
Yeah, I'm not able to do that.
I'm not able to do that. Do it in a way where it's firm, like, I'm not available. Like, something where someone can't negotiate with you. Like, oh, well, can you do it tomorrow? Like, no, that doesn't align with what I'm doing. Or, and I think it does get better. I know for me, I started, like, going to bed earlier to go to the gym in the morning. So I would tell people, like, no, I did not get your call. I was sleeping because, you know, I'm trying to get sleep because I have to go to the gym in the morning. And people in your life will eventually get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get it right away. If you were asleep at 9:30 today and 9:30 last week, then you're probably going to be asleep at 9:30 tomorrow. Yeah. I think the other thing is that you need to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for a lot of people. So you get up the courage to say no the one time. But then the next time, you know, it was so exhausting, I can't do it again.
I know.
Or, you know, you hoped that if you said it the one time, the person wouldn't come back and ask again. But because you have been challenged with this for so long, you know, people see that. People see the conflict within you.
Yes.
But that also goes back to, it's not all about you. Because saying no should not be this difficult. It should not be this challenging. So when you have those repeat offenders... You also, every year, I go through my list of contacts, my list of acquaintances, and I reevaluate, do you belong in my space right now? Do you respect me? Do you respect my choices? Do you make me feel uncomfortable? And if you're not meeting the criteria for the people that I set in my life, then I don't want to say I ghost people, but I'm comfortable with letting that relationship go.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are uncomfortable making that decision.
It is. And you brought me to a short story that I want to share. Because I know we're ending, but it reminds me of, and again, I'm so baffled by this. And I wish that there was something I could send people to get them to get their life together. Because I remember that I was talking to a guy. Things didn't work out, long story short. He continued to reach out to me even though I said no, Amy. And I was so confused. And then it turns, then I look like a bitch because I am blocking him and cursing him out. Why did you have to even bring me to that level when I told you stop contacting me, do not text me, do not call me? And they're saying, well, no, can I get another chance? And I told them, do you, and I was very like professional with them, quote unquote. I am saying no to you and you keep coming. Do you know how problematic that is? And I kept like stating the facts, like, you see what you're doing? And it was just like, I kept telling them, do you see what you're doing? Do you see what you're doing? And they're like, no, well, you're not giving me that. They put it on me. And I wanted to share that because I'm just like, I wish I could like send them something like a, like a, this is what you're doing. You need to fix it so you don't continue to damage people around you. And
I want to just add to that.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Because I have a favorite quote. And I believe the author is unknown, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
So forgive me, but my favorite quote is, you can say more with silence than you can say with words.
Yeah.
And for me, if I tell you no and you don't receive it, most often my next response is to be silent. I'm not going to, I think when we get into this habit of saying, having to say no in so many different words, it is counterproductive.
Yeah.
Like, I told you no, why do you keep reaching back? It's like, because you're answering me. You're saying no, but you're still giving me that attention.
I did answer him.
And not to, I'm not judging your response. No, because it's okay. We all respond to things differently. But I think, what I call it, a hard no.
Right.
A hard no and some silence can also be effective, obviously outside of the work environment, because you can't just ignore your emails or, you know, avoid interacting with your colleagues. But outside of that, I would say, yes, setting boundaries early, sticking to what you say, and removing toxic people from your life have been my strategies for not just saying no, but reinforcing that I mean it.
And I love, and you just keep making it so easy for me. I was going to say, what are your tips for saying no and setting boundaries? But you already said a whole bunch. I think I love to stay consistent. Setting boundaries early, I think, is really important. It is hard setting boundaries with people that are in your life already, but it's not impossible because I've been able to do it.
Yeah, I've seen a huge change in you even since we met.
Oh, thank you.
With saying no. Like, even I think when we would go to yoga or something, it would be like, oh, I don't, you know, I want to be perceived this way, or I don't want to upset anyone. And I remember we had conversations. I would say, why would I be upset if you can't go to yoga? I mean, this is an invitation, but...
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we talked through that, and I noticed now you put yourself first, and that's okay.
Yes.
That is okay, and it's necessary in order for you to be a productive member of society, to be a good friend. You cannot help anyone else when you are in a state of distress.
My favorite quote is, you cannot pour from an empty cup.
Yes.
And I've heard that in so many different variations, but it's so true. So if you want me to, you want me to be the friend that is, quote unquote, there for you when you're in distress, then you have to let me refill my cup. You have to let me take space. You have to let me hibernate and recharge my battery. Because someone like me who's always on needs to recharge her battery. And that's what I often struggle with. And that's something that is no one's fault but my own, that I need to recharge my battery. And I don't take time to always do that. But that is why I have this podcast, because it's allowing me to, when I have more on my plate, I feel like it allows me to prioritize my time more, which is weird. Yeah.
Can I just go back to something you asked me? I don't feel like I fully answered it. We were talking about how I set boundaries at home.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, I touched on, you know, not receiving calls late at night. I try to disconnect from work. But I also just wanted to mention that I really try to make my home my oasis.
Oh, yes.
And that means I don't invite a lot of people to my house. A lot of people don't know where I live. I'm very private. And I'm very selective about who I invite into my space. Like, I was having a conversation with my daughters the other day, and every other person they described, they said, oh, my friend this, my friend that. And I said, well, I'm sure that's a nice little girl, a nice little boy. But let's talk about this. What makes them your friend? How long have you known them? How do they treat you?
Mm-hmm.
What have your experiences been together? I think we need to be more careful about who we invite into our life and what roles we assign them.
Girl.
Because everyone is not your friend.
Yes.
When we take a moment to step back and understand that, I also think it makes it easier to set those boundaries.
Right.
Because if everybody is your friend and you're trying to please all your friends, you're going to run out of what's in your cup. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of my kids now.
That's all right. Noah and I, there's nothing else I have to say. That's it. So, Amy, what do you do for self-care? I think that you've named a couple of them already, but you kind of told us what your morning routine is like. What's your night routine to kind of wind down from the day?
So, I have a really rigorous, demanding job.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to give 100% to that. I'm really just getting into the habits of self-care recently. I recently joined a gym.
Life for Fitness
with Deb Found. Let me give a quick shout out.
Yes!
So I've been going to these classes probably for the last month, 2 to 3 times
She's
a week.
Awesome.
The class is amazing, but it gives me an opportunity to de-stress.
Yes.
Everything, it gives me a chance to clear my mind because, you know, I'm a scientist. I'm constantly rethinking questions. I'm constantly replaying these meetings. It gives me a chance to just release the stress, clear my mind.
Yeah.
I try to also be, I have 2 children. They're very active. They dance. So I try to just really enjoy my family. Because I think another thing that happens is we get so caught up in our work life and in our daily life that when we come home to be with our families, we're often distracted. We're missing those moments. So I try to disconnect. I'm really not on social media. Really limit our screen time.
That's awesome.
I come home. I play music with my girls. We do piano or violin. We dance. We go walking. We talk. We read. And so, and not to say we're not doing all that every evening.
No, but I'm like, that sounds amazing.
I mean, like right now there's a puzzle on the table. So rather than...
And there's always a puzzle on the table. You have the chalkboard, which always has like words or, I don't know, the schedules and, I don't know, some tic-tac-toe or something on it.
I try to really engage my children. I think the best thing I do when I come home is be actively engaged in my family.
Mm-hmm.
That is what replenishes me.
That's awesome.
I spend time in prayer and just being thankful for what I have and reevaluating maybe what I thought was negative, because I've learned that a lot of negative experiences, what seems negative in the moment is often something positive down the line or something I've avoided.
Right. A lesson.
Yeah, to answer your question, I just really invest in quality time with my family, and I try to engage in some kind of physical activity to keep my body and my mind healthy.
That's awesome. And Amy, to finish off our interview, how has love shown up for you this month?
Sorry. That's such a deep question. You just threw me off.
Sorry.
You know what? When you walked in the door, we just had this conversation, and I said, God is so good. Love has shown up for me by giving me a new environment. I think that anytime I am in need of something, it's provided to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this month, I was just reminded of that.
Yeah.
I'm not in great contact with my dad, but he's been messaging me lately.
Wow.
And just sending me like very positive thoughts each day.
That's awesome.
My children are thriving. I'm hitting my 1 month anniversary of being in Connecticut. I just, was awarded something for work that is going to be really positive. So,
that's awesome.
Honestly, I mean, when you asked me the question, it threw me off because if I really think about it, I feel like love shows up for me every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that I can see it and I can acknowledge it each day. So, there's a roundabout answer, but that is what I feel.
Yeah. You're actually the first person I asked that question to on the show.
Like, wait a minute, this is deep.
I was just trying it out. Thank you so much, Amy. I'm always grateful that I can have friends on the podcast, because I feel like, I mean, this podcast honestly wouldn't be as successful season one if I didn't have people who supported me and listen and are on the podcast. So thank you so much.
I'm so proud of you, and I'm so happy that I could share this moment with you. Yes. That's how love showed up for me.
Oh, okay, I'm gonna give you a hug after this. So if you guys have any questions about anything that Amy and I talked about, I will be adding the Psychology Today How to Say No in the show notes. You guys can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Basic Latina Podcast. If you want to ask me a personal question that you want me to answer on the podcast, you can also email me at basiclatinapodcast@gmail.com. We are going to do a listener letter episode in a couple of weeks, which I'm so excited about. And if you have any other questions or concerns, you can find us on all the different platforms, iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. The show was, the music is by Michael Guns, and the sound editing is by Gabby Barnes. Talk to you soon. Stay well and take care.